Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Becky, mm-hmm. How do you use your difference to make a difference?
Oh, what a beautiful question, first of all. Thank you for asking me. I use my difference by talking to people about what I'm talking about, by sharing what I've learned along the way, which is my book, and by trying to live it myself. Mm. And so I'm not coming at any of this from a preachy point of view. I'm really trying to learn how to be enough, do enough, and contribute to the world being able to live with enough so that we can all thrive. That is really my aim and mission in life.
How you day, how you day. That was the voice of Becky Hall. Now, I know the idea of being enough, feeling enough, doing enough is one that, you know, doesn't have a universal meaning. That's why today's episode is really beneficial. Becky wrote a book called The Art of Enough, and in the interview, we dive into different ways we can find that balance of being enough, doing enough, and understanding what enoughness means to us. And I really loved the way we had a conversation about it, because it really depends on several factors: the way you grew up, your environment, your vision, the amount of intention you put into there, what you're aware of, how much inside work you do, what types of boundaries you need to set. And in this interview, we go through all those things. I also want you to look at this as just a reminder to yourself to be compassionate and to be present, and for you to be able to sit in moments that are difficult for you and then ask yourself what questions you need to ask yourself in those moments. The idea of filtering out what you think is happening versus what is happening is one of the biggest gifts that we can give ourselves in life. So please enjoy this episode. Please take notes. Please get her book. She has a lot of practices and several practical things that you can do in your life and with your loved ones. And ensure that you share the episode, you know, leave reviews, share with your loved ones, do whatever you need to do to get the word out there. We always love it here at As Told by Nomads. Thank you so much and enjoy. Welcome everyone to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today's guest is Becky Hall. Now, Becky is an EMCC registered senior practitioner, executive coach, leadership consultant, and facilitator with over 20 years experience working with senior leaders and executive teams around the globe. In Becky's most recent book, The Art of Enough, she explores the unprecedented expectations we put on ourselves in our modern world, which have given rise to an increasing epidemic of burnout and stress. And she offers a lot of practical tips and advice. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Becky.
Hey, thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be with you all.
The pleasure is mine. I got to say, this concept of enough is something I've wrestled with for a long time, right? Whether, you know, I study belonging, I study different ways people are feeling oppressed and suppressed. And I'm curious for you, what was your reason for wanting to create a framework for the art of belonging?
Well, it's interesting that you connect it with belonging, because I think that's it, they're connected, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason that I wanted to explore enough is because I began to notice patterns in my coaching. Mm-hmm. So I work one-to-one with a load of people, as you've said, and I've been doing that for a long time. And it was actually really a long time ago. It was about 7 years ago. I began to notice that a lot of people that I was working with who were executive leaders, people who were really successful, already, you know, done really good in the eyes of the world, were doubting themselves. So this whole sort of imposter syndrome, feeling like, am I really enough? How come I've got here? I have to keep striving. So a lot of people I was working with felt that they somehow weren't enough, even though they'd already achieved some levels of success.
Yeah.
And then I also began to notice that a whole load of people that I was working with and in the world are just burning out. It's like everyone feels like they've got too much to do all the time, too much pressure, from whether it's online pressure, whether it's work pressure, whether it's self-imposed pressure. But everyone, so many people are struggling with almost doing enough. So like not doing too much. And then I put it in the context of what's happening in the world, where collectively, societally, we're really wrestling with this idea of how we can modify how we live so that we don't, so that the world doesn't burn up. You know, we're in the climate crisis is happening, and we have to modify how we live, and that feels really uncomfortable. And it, you know, for all of us, it's a really difficult thing to wrestle with. So it feels like the theme that connects all of it, or it felt like to me the theme that connects all of it is this idea of enough, that if we can feel that we are enough, if we can learn how to do enough, and it might help us as a society to rebalance inequalities and injustices, and also just so that everyone is able to thrive, we're all able to thrive individually and collectively. That's kind of where I started coming from. That's why I'm interested in it.
No, I love it, because, you know, when you bring up thrive there, I think a lot of us are trying to survive, right? And your thrive would be the better counterpart to that. But even if I'm looking at the last previous years, I believe your book came out right in the thick of the pandemic. And so we've had the pandemic, we've had the different thoughts of recession, whether it's real or it's not, we've had all these conflicts. It almost feels like the consequences of what has happened in the last, let's say, 3.5 years or so has sped up so many people's versions of what it means to fit in, fit out, to be enough. And I did hear you. I heard you say in an interview where you talked about how the pursuit of more can actually be detrimental to our well-being. So I was curious if you could elaborate on how you wrote the book in the backdrop of all these things happening in the past, and then share some personal examples of, you know, how you've found you're enough.
Yeah, great. Well, look, yeah, I was writing this. In some ways, the pandemic was a bit of a gift for me, because it made me sit at my desk and write the book that I've been wanting to write for a long time. And it made me realize that I too, of course, get caught up in the I'm too busy. How am I going to find time to do the thing that I really want to do, which was write a book? So, but it also, as you said, we seem to have had crisis after crisis after crisis, or sort of big event that's really thrown a lot of this into sharp relief. So this idea that our pursuit of more is part of the problem comes from this this idea that we're coming from a place of scarcity. So in my book and in my thinking, I've created like the image of a set of scales, like an old-fashioned set of scales where you put a weight on one side and then whatever, the flour or the coffee or whatever on the other side, you'd get a balance. And I kind of think that what happens in our world right now, really individually but also societally, is that when we have on the one hand a sense of scarcity, so everything we have is too little, and when we come from that place as individuals, we're like, we're not enough, we're not good enough, we have to strive, we have to overcome, we have to fight to prove ourselves and make ourselves better, and that is in and of itself a place of anxiety and a place of and you know, difficulty. And then on the other side of the scales is excess. So we've got too much work. We've got too many demands on us. We haven't got the what it takes to meet the challenges we face. And both of these are really filled with fear, a sense of fear, you know, where I'm scared that I can't do enough. I'm scared that I'm not enough. And, it, you know, we sort of, because we don't feel like we're good enough, we try and overcompensate and then we swamp ourselves and burn out. And it feels like this sort of endless sort of oscillation between one end of the scale and the other. And so enough is really saying, do you know what? Actually, if we shift our focus away from scarcity, away from feeling that we lack something, and start practicing the idea that we come from a place of fullness, that who we are is okay. It's really okay. It might not be the final product. It might not be the version, the fantasy version of ourselves that we wish we were, but it's really an okay place to start, that we are in and of ourselves full. There's abundance in the world. There's love in the world. We can do this. It helps us to focus, move our focus away from striving to overcompensate for what we lack, and start this focus on thriving, really, that we can go, okay, what would it be to live a healthy life, not just one where I have to only focus on surviving. It's not saying that we don't have to survive. Of course, we have to survive. But what would it be like to shift our emphasis and stop coming from a place where we feel we lack something?
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, that's been my journey too. I'd be lying if I didn't say that, you know, the reason I'm so interested in all of this stuff is because I've been there. You know, I've had those struggles too. And I've both developed practices for myself and also supported and worked with clients to develop practices. And one of them being just the practice of appreciating what I have to offer, in terms of who I am, rather than always thinking of what I lack. So if my inner critic in my head says, oh, Becky, you haven't done that. Oh, you're no good at that. Oh, my God, you haven't done that yet again. Oh, look, you know, beating myself up, I can notice that voice is happening. I can hear it. I can even thank it and go, yeah, thanks for trying to protect me. Yep. But stand down and offer instead a voice which might say, for example, you know, you're really good enough as it is, and you're trying hard and bringing the best of yourself. So the challenge you've got is going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's a new emphasis.
One of the things I struggle with, and I've struggled with this almost all my life, is this concept of accepting that where I am is enough, right? You know, there's either, I feel like if once I achieve a goal, there's always another thing to achieve. Or if something happens in the negative, I take on that blame. And then it's like, I should have done better. You should have known this. You should have anticipated this. Even if there was nothing realistically that I could have done. And it is, you know, it's had me sit down with myself to really reflect on why I am quick to try and be the hero or the villain in each of these stories, right? And not okay with just being. And I love the way you defined enough as a state of being and a way of living. Because maybe it is, in fact, that I haven't been viewing enough as just the state of being, and as achievement and failure as my actual states of being. Like these two sides of the extremes. And I think in the book you wrote that so many people are out of balance. It's as if we are on a seesaw the whole time, swinging between too much and not enough. And I think that's, you know, I was reading that and I was like, this oscillation between these two extremes is what I feel like a lot of people do. And do you feel like there's an environmental, parental, societal reason that we exist in the extreme and not enough on the balanced side?
Yes, I do. And listen, you know, I hear you. I really hear you. And what I really like about what you just said, by the way, is that it's this idea that we have to do something to prove to ourselves that we are enough, instead of, so we focus on doing instead of being. And that's always the tension. We have to do both, of course. But in answer to your question, yes, I do. I think actually the way I explore it in the book is that it's an inside out thing. So I think that it both individually, I think it's really, really useful for us to explore whether or not or how we can build our own sense of feeling that we are enough, who you are is enough. And the first thing I think you can do is look at your mindset, but also look at look at your family. You know, where we learn how to be in our first 10 years of life, and whatever those first 10 years of life are for you, whether they were really happy or whether they were really challenging or somewhere in between, which is most of us, is it really gives us a sense of what we feel we're, how we develop a sense of whether we're okay or not. And there's this idea in the book that I explore, which I call enough permission. And I ask the question, you know, who do you need permission from to be enough? Or when you're striving or trying to do all of these things, who are you really secretly trying to impress? Now, you know, that could be somebody from your past life that you never see anymore. It could be because they're no longer alive or with us, or it could be that they're, you know, a teacher that you used to have that you never see anymore, but who really cut you up when you were, you know, 6 or 7 and said a nasty thing that you're still traveling with. And I think so in terms of sort of deep inner work, there's plenty that we can all do to really explore whose permission we're seeking to thrive, and whether or not we're able to disentangle ourselves from something that in the past might have served us but that might have influenced us, and say, well, now as an adult, now in my life, I'm going to give myself permission. How can you sort of reclaim, if you like, the ability to really live the path you want to live?
Yeah.
So it's a sort of choice point, but it, you know, I'm making it sound easy. It's not easy. It's intense. It's painstaking work, but it's worth asking the question. For example, who are you being loyal to when you say, I don't think I can do this, or I've got to do this? Oh, who would smile on you when they see you working so hard? Who is that? Now, it could be your father or your mother or your aunt or your uncle or something. And then you can go, well, look, you can almost sort of reenact that and say to whoever it is, with the greatest respect, thank you for trying to look out for me, but you know, I'm going to do it my way now. That there's a bit of that belongs to you and a bit belongs to me.
Yeah.
And you know, I've trained a lot in systemic work, for systemic family work, and that framing has really helped me to work out, look, as an adult now, I'm going to claim my choice, and I'm going to decide how I give myself permission to thrive. And as I say that, I think, oh, what gets in the way of that? Who's getting in the way of that in my head and my heart? And how do I go beyond that? So this is work that is very inner. And in my experience of working on myself and also with others, I find that if you manage to do that work or begin to do that work well, it places you in a better position when you want to start looking at doing enough, or not what you do. So this thing about burnout and overwhelm that so many of us are struggling with really comes down to making clear choices and being able to set good boundaries and resource ourselves well for the things that we really, really care about. And you know, I don't know many people who are really good at saying no to stuff, you know, who really find it easy to say no. No, I'm not going to take that piece of work on.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to do that. Or no, I can't do that. Because it's usually linked to all the other stuff I've been talking about, you know, that you've got to do stuff for approval, or that you've got to, you haven't really got the choice. And I think that if you begin to build a real sense of, look, I'm enough, I'm okay, and I really I want to focus my energy on thriving, that means that sometimes you have to say, do you know what? No, I'm not available for this, whatever it is.
I mean, it strikes me that you're very introspective because the book does ask a lot of questions, right? And I often say, you know, one of the best ways to save your life is and save yourself is really asking the right questions. And I think you're asking the right questions. Like, there's a, we're going to use the word balance here a lot. There's a balance between being aware and being intentional, right? And so you had asked earlier, who are you trying to impress? And I think some people's answers would be an inner child, like a certain age, a teenage me, 10-year-old me, and all those. And, you know, maybe that was an aspiration that that little version of yourself wanted to be based on what that little version of yourself thought was successful. But as you're asking the questions, you then have to like really think about whether what your idea of success was correct and whether you were too external as opposed to internal and not appreciating yourself. And so, that you know, there are a lot of layers is what I'm getting at here with how you, what can happen if you ask the right questions in order for you to figure out your level of enoughness is. And I believe you say enough is resourced by love and abundance.
Totally. I do say that. And I mean, that can absolutely and self-acceptance is at the core. I mean, I love your bringing up, you know, the inner child and the inner teenager. And I think, you know, when we're young, we look up to into the future and think, oh, what, if I get here, I'll be happy. I'll have made it. And then, you know, part of the sort of thing about growing up is that sometimes you get to the place that you thought was going to be the thing that would make you happy. And it does make you happy. And other times it doesn't, you know, like, our society is full of people who strive to make enough money to become rich or whatever. And of course, I'm not suggesting we don't all need enough money. Of course, we need enough to live and provide for those that we love. But actually, money in and of itself, after a point of survival, doesn't make us happy. You know, you look at all the research, it doesn't. And you get to that point, you go, God, I've worked all this time, I've done all that stuff, and look, it's actually, maybe there's something else. So going back to the inner child thing, you can thank your 10-year-old self for looking out for you and for giving you ambition and helping you get to where you've got. And then say, you know, thank you, and now I'm going to choose a different path.
Right. Yeah. That's the art of the reframe. You talk about the art of enough. That's a reframe. Mm. And then self-compassion, right? Just like really being kind to yourself and understanding how to cultivate.
Yeah. The thing about self-acceptance is that it sounds really easy. And of course, it's the really hard thing, because most of us have got an inner critic, all of us have got an inner critic, I'd say. And you know, making friends with ourselves and learning to love and include even the bits of ourselves that are annoying or worse, that we really don't like, is a lifetime's journey. But you know, the more we can say, do you know what, the more we can look at ourselves without judgment, that's the thing, I think. And Teo, I'm telling you now, I've worked on this. You know, this isn't like, and I'm work in progress. I'm not like I know self-judgment really well. And through the practices, some of the practices I'm talking about in the book and some of the things I've learned, is if you learn to notice that self-judgment and just go, oh, okay, I hear you. Almost sort of have an internal conversation with yourself. Go, I've noticed that. I'm gonna pause and reflect, and then I'm gonna choose whether I want to listen to that voice or whether there's another kind of voice, like a compassionate, self-compassionate voice. What would my best friend say? Or even what would my 10-year-old self say to if he or she, in my case, heard the judgment voice talking to me like that? You know, a 10-year-old might be much more feisty in response.
Right. well, do you have any specific gratitude or compassionate practices that, you know, someone in the audience can listen to? Because I imagine people in the audience nodding now and saying, yeah, that's me. I wonder if there's something I could start applying right now.
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing I always start with, and this is a practice I do, is appreciation or gratitude that I start every, well, at some point in every single day, I stop and focus on three things that I'm grateful for right now, right in this very, very moment. Mm-hmm. And the reason I focus on right in this very, very moment is because it can often, it alters our state. It helps our nervous system if we focus on right now. So right now, honestly, I'm grateful I'm talking to you. I'm enjoying this conversation. And
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
It's great to connect. Yeah. And I'm grateful that I wrote this book, and I'm also grateful that I'm wearing a lovely woolly cart jumper, because here in the UK it's pretty cold right now. And you know, so they don't have to be big things. It doesn't have to be I'm grateful for the biggest thing that's ever happened to me. It can be really specific and in the moment. And the reason that's so useful, if you get into the practice of thinking like that, of doing that every day. Three things that I'm grateful for right now, and if you write them down, it's even better, because it sort of makes it a bit more real. The reason that's so good is partly what I've already said, it resets your nervous system, but also it really it helps you to build an alternative to the sort of sense of scarcity. It helps you to begin to build a neural pathway in your head that is like, no, I've got enough. So that's a definite practice that I use, and I would associate it with any sort of meditation or any sort of mantra that you want to develop around that. And another practice, this is a bit more like an exercise that I often offer my clients and work with people, is when you do notice your inner critic, imagine yourself at a party. So you're at a drinks party or something, and the inner critic is the person who gets you at the drinks party and just yaks in your ear for, you know, like really takes over all the airtime, like bah, 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 bah. So really it's like you're really envisaging that this inner critic voice is a real person, and then give yourself that, then go look around the room and go, oh, look, there are four or five other people in the room. I'm going to hear from them. And what I invite people to do is almost create the voices that you might want to hear from. So as I've said, you know, the kind, what would my kind self say? What would my self-compassion self say? You could even say, you know, what would my thriving self say? What are the voices? What are the things? Who else do you want to hear from?
I like that. I never thought of it as creating the, you know, it's like that movie Inside Out.
Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah, but you're actually taking ownership of you're giving them personas. You're like, all right, this is that. Interesting. Wow. Okay.
Okay. Like writing your own movie for your head. Again, who are the voices? And do you know what? I my experience is that, you know, some of them are like you go, yeah, okay, they're not telling me anything interesting, but they could surprise you, because you're connecting with your own creativity, and you're also connecting with what you need.
Yeah.
So it's usually connected with a need that you, something that's not being given, you're not giving yourself.
Yeah.
You know, What's the opposite of judgmental? I guess the opposite of judgmental is compassionate. So you might want to, or whatever it is for any of our listeners, you know.
Yeah.
But finding that voice and really asking it or imagining it to say something that it would that would offer you, like almost in response to the judgmental voice. Because honestly, I think we're all terrorized by our own this judgmental voice and this sense of should and oh God, I need to and it's encouraged in our world. You know, our worlds want us to do more and better and bigger and yeah, all the time. Like. When can we rest?
When can we rest? You know, I like what you said. You connected with what you need, and you know, I was following up in my head mentally, and it's you're connected with what you need. You're not connected with what you think you need, and I think there's a subtle difference, right? Sometimes you think you need something, and what you need is actually rest, for example, and maybe you think you need 2 more hours to put in the work time. You're like, well, I need a rest.
Yeah. You know, I like the distinction between what you need and what you think you need, because, you know, we're not just our heads. We're not just our left hemispheric heads, which are usually the narky judgy bits of our brain, which wants logic and straightforward and answers and speed. And, you know, actually, we're gifted with bodies, you know, which have hearts in them and guts in them and nervous systems. And they tell us a whole load of stuff that we can, if we start to listen to and engage with, might really help us, you know. And you know, what would be the most loving thing that we could do right now, you know, ask your heart. You know, our gut's often associated with courage, so you know, what's the most courageous thing I could say to myself, you know. It's not all that stuff.
So let's shift from personal, because we've been talking about inside work here. Let's go a little outside here. So we're going inside out. So you've done this work now, obviously enough, but I mean, you and I know relationships can play a role. This could be a romantic relationship, professional relationship, best friend, whatever it is. And I've been in a toxic relationship. I don't know if you've been, but I'm sure you've heard stories at least of where you lose yourself and then you feel like you're not enough for that person, or you're not enough for whatever union. Does this translate as well to that type of union?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it does in that every relationship and every adult relationship, every healthy adult relationship requires a balance of exchange, right? You have to give and receive an equal amount, even if you give and receive different things. But, you know, like it doesn't matter whether in like, say you've got kids and you're in a relationship, you know, one person might work to earn the money and one person might do the caregiving of the kids. It doesn't mean that they're not both doing this. It's an equality of exchange, even though people are doing different roles. And if you can think of loads of other examples which aren't to do with kids, and it could just be about, you know, giving each other enough attention or affection or airtime in a friendship, you know. And it's usually relationships are challenged when there's an inequality of exchange. Toxic relationships are especially about that. It's about one person becoming metaphorically bigger than the other person, and the other person shrinking, and the one person having the sort of authority or the sort of sense of airtime, and the other person shrinking. So I would say how that relates to enough is that really, if you know and believe and practice and work on the fact that you are enough, really doing all the deep work that we've referred to already, it makes it much more likely that you're going to offer exchange, that you're not going to take somebody telling you that you're not enough, because you know that you are. So you're more likely to sort of be able to square up to that person and say, look, you know, it doesn't even have to be aggressively. You can just say, you can say what you like, but I know that I am okay, that I'm enough. I'm not suggesting that that's easy, and people who are in toxic relationships have my heart, because it's difficult, you know. And sometimes it's downright, you know, abusive, and so I'm not suggesting, I'm not making light of any of that stuff, but really in relation to this work of enough, if the more we can believe that we're enough, I think the better contribution we can make to every part of our lives, be that our relationships, our work, our contribution to the world, or even, you know, our ambition for our careers or anything else, because you're starting from a place of going, I know I am good enough, or I'm okay, and I will give the best of myself to whatever the challenge is or whatever the situation is.
You know, it strikes me that as humans, one of the biggest things someone can take away from you is your sense of self, your self-worth. And you're essentially talking about how to find and affirm your sense of self and your self-worth. And so if you ever find yourself in the toxic situations, and if I'm even going into my personal life, whether it was a romantic or personal, it's when you give enough power, consciously or subconsciously, right? Whether it's abuse or misuse, or just feel like you need to be less of yourself in order to get validation from someone. The sense of yourself is being suppressed at the expense of something. Now, it could be, again, consciously or subconscious or unconscious. So if you're not as intentional as aware of it, or doing the practices that you're saying, it's easy for you to go to the default, which when we started this interview, we were talking about the environment. The environment plays a role. And so maybe you then get into this idea of, well, maybe my goals don't matter. Maybe it should be. Maybe he is right. Maybe she is right. Maybe they are right. You start thinking all these things because you are not centering yourself enough to understand.
That's so true. You know, my one of my favorite quotes is by a psychologist called Jung, Carl Gustav Jung, and he said, until we make the unconscious conscious, it will control your life, and you will call it fate. So until you make the unconscious conscious, it will control your life, and you will call it fate. So that's exactly what I'm talking about. That you notice patterns in yourself, and you know, it does go back to childhood, because if you were brought up being told that you weren't good enough, then it's really likely that that's going to repeat in relationships that you have in life until you are able to, often with help and support, you know, therapy, you know, listening
therapy
to podcasts,
for sure, yeah,
whatever else you can do, and until you can build a sense of, no, I am enough, and then you can sort of recalibrate that and make choices.
Yeah,
about how you show up and how you contribute.
This is beautiful. Well, I'm sure you've done this work for a long time now. I'm curious if you've heard any misconceptions of enough. You've seen the wave of hustle culture. You're seeing, you know, the different the digital age rise, fast paced nature come. But I'm curious if you've ever heard pushback to your idea of being enough.
Well, the pushback I've had actually is that people, if you say in some contexts, I think we need to aim for enough. People go, oh no, I don't want to be mediocre. I don't want to be second best. It's sort of it's sort of associated with a lack of ambition.
Mm.
And I get that. Look, I get that. And in a way, what I'm making a sort of linguistic point. But I would say, because of everything we've just been talking about, that enough is a springboard for success. It's not saying that we don't need to want to be amazing. We don't want to be the best of ourselves. Of course we do. Of course we want to be as good as we can be and make the best contribution that we can to every part of our life. And I'm saying that rather than enough being that this sort of limiting, mediocre, oh God, I don't want to be successful, I'm saying actually it's a springboard for being able to thrive. And the other pushback I get is that people don't like the idea of limits. Idea of limits it's really countercultural. It's you know, we say the sky's the limit, or we will blow the lid off that limit, or you know, we're going to thrash that target.
I'm one of those people.
And listen, I get it. So am I. But do you know what? But so I reframe that and go, what about boundaries, right? Think about limits and boundaries in terms of things that keep us safe. So the analogy I use is of a plant pot, right? If you want to grow a plant on your desk, mm-hmm. you have to put it in a pot because that contains it. It gives it a sort of framework Ooh. For it to be able to thrive. And then you water it, it contains it, literally a container, right? Yeah. And actually, we need containers. We need containers. And the trouble with, you know, 21st century life in 2023, 2024, is that we've gone, the containers aren't there in the same way anymore. You know, I'm old enough to be able to remember the time before social media when you finished work, you finished work. And of course, like everyone else in the world, I've got a phone and I use it all the time. And, you know, I get screen eyes and, you know, I check my emails at late at night. But it's not always healthy. In fact, yeah. it's really not healthy to believe that we always have to be available and we always have to be responsive, because it makes us anxious and it means that we don't rest enough. And, you know, there's a direct correlation between the epidemic of burnout that there is in certainly in the Western culture, its society, and the lack of perceived boundaries. And you know, if we can just fall back in love with the idea that we need to be contained and that it's okay to have boundaries which contain us, and not only that, it will be it is those very boundaries that will allow us to thrive.
Yeah. You know, so I always say this when I do my workshops, I say there's several things that you need to be present for, right? To experience joy, you need to be present, right? Compassion, mm-hmm. you need to be present. Mm-hmm. Gratitude, you need to be present. And in this generation, right, I'm definitely one of those people that's guilty. When you're constantly looking at your phone and you're creating this environment, whether you're doing it consciously or subconsciously or even unconsciously, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. there's a comparison happening, or there's a, oh, that's happening there. Oh, I need to call this. Oh, I need to call that. Oh, that person's girl. Congrats. Oh, that's you're just putting yourself in a situation where your brain is going to the forward side, or, you know, maybe regretting something in the past based on whatever you're seeing. And who gets lost in that moment? It's the present moment. And so you're just in the future, or you're in the past, you're in the future, you're in the past, after work, you're in the future, you're in the past. And you don't even know what's happening to your body, your central nervous system, and your mind. And then when the burnout happens, you're like, how did I get here? What the heck is happening? You never took care of it, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's the biggest irony, I think, which is that we might be connected to thousands of people on social media, and yet we still feel lonely.
Right? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yes. It's so true.
Isn't that ironic? So we've lost the art of real connection. So you know, my last chapter in the book is called Enough Connection. And what I'm talking about is connected to yourself, your inner self, all the stuff we've been talking about, connected, as you've just said, to the present moment and to our own present moment, how we really are right now in the present moment, how, you know, connected to all aspects of that. But then really connected to each other with the quality of attention that we recognize when we get it from one another. You know, look someone in the eye, really listening to them, really hearing them. And you know what? I genuinely do believe that if we remembered how to connect properly with ourselves and with each other, and I would extend it to the world, the earth, I think a load of the problems that the world is facing right now would just be less, because we wouldn't just be shouting at each other on social media. We would be actually connecting and looking someone in the eye and going, let me listen to what you've got to say about this. And I might not agree with you, but I'm going to really hear it. Right. And then you do the same for me. And let's see where we get to.
I think you're right. I think we've sort of created this, I don't know if it's a disease of more. There's a basketball coach, Pat Riley, that says that. But he was basically talking about championships and how people always want more and more. But even their industries built on the idea of what enough is, or who's more enough, or that's not enough, or you don't get enough until you get this, or that person is the worst. Come here, you be bad. It's all this versions of like.
It's so true. Yeah. Let me read this quote to you. Right, this isn't me. This is this guy called Tim Jackson, who's an economist, and he did a TED talk ages ago in 2010. But he said this: "We're persuaded to spend money we don't have on things we don't need to make impressions that won't last on people we don't care about."
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that true?
The fact that you memorized that. it's true. It's true. Credit cards, the gifts, the commercials, they understand.
Advertising is predicated on the premise of making us feel like we lack something so that we have to buy it. So, you know, we kind of are up against that. But but it's not actually, I'm not dissing the whole of advertising or our whole.
No, I know you're not. But it's still something to be aware of, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And also, I really, really believe it's something you said about choice that I think that we just forget that we can make choices about how we live our lives. We forget that, or we are not even aware that we could choose to have a whole day without looking at social media if we want to. That's within our gift. It's entirely within our gift. Nothing would happen. The world wouldn't end. And it might just give us a bit of the space that we crave or we long for.
Right.
There are plenty of practices that can help us to bring into the present moment. And as you say, if you're able to be present, then you can access joy and connection. And actually, you're much more likely to be an incredible sports person if you're a sport, or be an incredible whatever it is. If your nervous system's regulated, you know.
Yeah. Parent, coach, friend.
Everything.
Right?
Yeah.
And even to the point where we talked about the interpersonal side, if someone is projecting onto you that you're not enough or anything, being enough actually allows you to set a boundary for yourself. Yeah. And so maybe that person's journey isn't whatever that is meant for you, but you actually loving yourself, right? You said it's a lot of times it's resourced by love and abundance. You seeing yourself through that abundance and love mindset, you're like, well, you know, maybe this is not the person for me, and I have to accept that I'm enough. And abundance is whoever is meant for me will be there, but I'm going to continue being enough. And then just take yourself out of that. That's
lovely. Yeah. I mean, I sometimes do this thing where you get like a piece of string and put in the circle and literally stand in it. So you're like going, okay, this is my boundary. And then you can go, you know, if somebody comes at you and says you're not enough, you can just say, thank you for sharing your view. But respectfully, I disagree. And I know in my heart I am. You know, it's like being, because it's a boundary thing, and you can go, no, that's you. I'm me. I don't have to take on your view of me. I can just go, no.
Well, you and I could talk all day, but this has been very pleasant. I'm very curious though. Yeah. Where can people find The Art of Enough, your book?
Oh, well, they can find it on Amazon or any other good bookseller. Please do go buy a book. And if you're a supporter of independent bookshops, you can buy them there too, because they can always order them.
Yes.
And my website is called Presence, actually, because I've been at www.presence.uk.net. But my book is, you can get it on Amazon, as I say, and there are plenty of reviews. And if you like it and read it, please leave me a review as well. That always makes me feel happy, and I love to know whether it's making a difference. So,
well, thank you so much. I have one final question, and that's my mission statement reframed as the question. And so... Mm-hmm. You know, Becky, how do you use your difference to make a difference?
Oh, what a beautiful question, first of all. Thank you for asking me. I use my difference by talking to people about what I'm talking about, by sharing what I've learned along the way, which is my book, and by trying to live it myself. So I'm not coming at any of this from a preachy point of view. I'm really trying to learn how to be enough, do enough, and contribute to the world being able to live with enough so that we can all thrive. That is really my aim and mission in life.
Thank you so much. Hey, it looks like you're doing a good job of it. So I want to thank you for giving me a few moments
You've
of your time.
Just
but thank
been
you,
listening
though.
To oh, the As Told really, by Nomads podcast.
Oh,
for more ways
pleasure.
To reach
thank
out to Tayo.
Pleasure's mine. Kings, queens, and royalty until next
difference.
Time.
Head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.